Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hawk Talk podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. As per usual, I am your host, Parker Limonstall, and today I am joined by a brand new guest in the studio, CJ Tom. CJ, how you doing today, buddy?
Doing pretty good, man. The weather's been kind of bad, but not going to lie, the week's been pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. Finals time is quickly approaching here at Quincy University, but that don't stop the Hawk Talk podcast. We got some good news for you today. We're going to talk about our QU baseball team as per usual, gloss over a little about the women's lacrosse team, and the big talk of the hour that's been on everyone's mind for the last 24 hours, the first round of the NFL draft and previewing the second round of the draft. But first, let's get things started with the QU baseball team, CJ.
Ooh, so we have a series coming up against McKendree University over this weekend. And I'm not going to lie, it's looking pretty good for us, I think.
Absolutely. McKendree in the standings is one of the teams that is on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoff standings. Right now, the Quincy Hawks heading into these final two conference series currently stand in eighth place in the GLVC, only one game above Illinois Springfield. So it's going to be a tough race to the finish between all of these teams. I will say, though, in the update from the previous episode, when me and Tony were talking, we have had some clinches and eliminations. The Upper Iowa Peacocks have been eliminated from the GLVC Conference Tournament. The Southwest Baptist Bearcats have been officially eliminated from GLVC Conference Tournament play. And just this morning, due to them losing a 14-1 game against the University of Indianapolis Greyhounds, the Truman State Bulldogs have also been eliminated from the GLVC Conference Tournament. And now you were talking about McKendree there. McKendree, if McKendree loses one game of their eight remaining conference games, if they lose one game or Quincy wins one game, the McKendree Bearcats season is over.
So no matter what, that is going to happen this weekend is what it sounds like, because we got a four-game set.
Indeed, four games away. This will be the Hawks' last away series in the regular season before they host the Illinois Springfield Prairie Stars at QU Stadium for their final four-game series of the year. That is going to be a big one.
Oh, yeah. That one looks like it's going to be a pretty close set. We're looking at Illinois Springfield right now. They have, what is their record right now? They're one game behind us with 14-14 in conference, and we are 15-13.
Yep, and their overall record. And now, unfortunately, how the GLVC works, and I found this out a few days ago, is they don't use head-to-head as the tiebreaker for conference record. What they will use as the initial tiebreaker is the overall record. Now, it's not impossible for Quincy to win that tiebreaker. However, it's very unlikely considering, pardon me on that, the Hawks have five less wins and six more losses than Illinois Springfield. So in the overall record scheme, the Hawks are 5.5 games back. So when it comes to a tiebreaker, unless something drastic happens, Quincy's not going to be able to win that overall record battle with them.
Yeah, that one doesn't look very good. But looking at the team that we're going to be playing for McKendree this weekend, not going to lie, it's looking pretty good for us. Their total ERA is sitting right at 9.6. They don't have a pitcher below a 5.4 ERA.
And we kind of saw that in this last week's series with the Southwest Baptist Bearcats. Going into that series, the Bearcats didn't have, if I recall right, did not have a single pitcher with an ERA lower than 6.25.
That makes a lot of sense, because watching that game, they didn't have a lot of players that looked like they could throw above 85. And I think that's a pretty good spot to be at for college baseball, sitting above 85. Because if you're anywhere below that, it's just straight BP.
Absolutely, and that's why the Hawks in this last series pretty much, except for I think one of the games in the four-game set against Southwest Baptist, pretty much had a field day.
Yeah, it was, our first game was 13-1. We struggled the second game a little bit, but we still got the win 4-2. Third game, it was 9-4. Fourth game, it was 10-7. So yeah, it was straight BP for us is what it looked like, but all except for that one game. But hopefully we can get that same thing rolling again this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. And just kind of looking at what the schedule looks like for the GLVC when it comes to baseball. Previously mentioned, UIndy and Truman State, They had a four-game series going into this. Obviously, UIndy just took game one. And right now, as we are speaking, Lewis and William Jewell are playing, and so is Quincy and McKendry. So I'm going to kind of take a quick peek on those stats as we're going in here. So you were talking about BP for the Hawks bats. It's currently 11-1 Quincy as of this recording at the top of the fifth.
Well, I would sure hope so.
So that's a really good sign for the Hawks that they really do need this win because they need all the help they can get because Illinois Springfield will be playing a series against Southwest Baptist this weekend. So in realistic terms, with the expectations that Illinois Springfield and Quincy, regardless of whether they're the top of the conference or towards where they are right now in that bubble area for the tournament, they always seem to be very similar to one another. So I would assume it's going to be a very similar situation to what we saw between Quincy and Southwest Baptist going into that series. So if I'm the Hawks, you got to win almost every game in this series. You have to.
Absolutely. McKendry seems like the kind of team that is lower in the standings for a reason. And because of that, if we play them as in the way that we should take as many games as we possibly can. Just because they look to be that low of a level, looking at it, their ERA is obviously not very good. Their batting average, they don't have a guy above 400, which is, I mean, very high, but they only have three guys batting above 300. So that is a spot that we could take advantage of too. And I know our pitchers, we only have one guy below a 3 ERA, I think, but we can take advantage of that low batting average and the low on-base percentage because they only have one guy above 400 as well. We can take advantage of that and just jump all over it.
Absolutely, and that's something that I will give credit to the Hawks pitching staff, and our listeners here on this podcast know that especially me, Tony, and Connor, when we've been on this show, have, I don't want to say dogged, but we've been very critical of what the bullpen action in the Hawks has been over the last few weeks, almost the entire year. And I would definitely say while it's gotten better, there's still room for improvement. I mean, Ben Drager has looked phenomenal with his job in the bullpen. He is one of only two bullpen arms that has an ERA below a 2. He has a 1.69.
Yes.
The other is Alex Pickus, who made his first appearance of the year, so he currently has a 0. It was actually his first collegiate career appearance. And then while Josh Heppelman did give up 2 earned runs in the game against Missouri Western earlier this week, he only sports a 4.09 ERA. Before that, he was kind of toying with that 2.9 ERA. So Josh Hempelman's even a really good arm in the rotation in the bullpen. But then when it comes to the rotation, we've seen Griffin Curran, who is putting on, I want to say, like a GLVC Cy Young type season.
He's doing really, really good.
I mean, this guy, game in, game out, is going double digits with strikeouts. He's going 6 or 7 innings, which is exactly what you want from a starter. He's only sporting a 2.76 ERA, so he's not giving up a lot of runs. So the Hawks are going to need to really lean on him, and he is the one that was starting today's game. So it looks like he's continuing that precedent. As a matter of fact, let me pull it up here, see exactly how he's doing today. I'm under the assumption he is pitching. He is. So at this point, he's gone 4 innings and only surrendered 1 run. It was an earned one, but other than that, it's been pretty solid day as per usual for Griffin Curran. But again, we still have the game going on. But it's really looking good right now for the Hawks. But not only are they playing McKendry, we have another huge, and I mean huge, CJ, series going on in the GLVC for baseball, and that is the Lewis versus William Jewell series. Right now, they're the other game going on with William Jewell up 11-9 in the bottom of the eighth, so Lewis will be down to their last 3 outs. Those two teams are combined in a 4-way tie for the 8th, 7th, 6th, and 5th place spots in the conference. So
this series is going to have a big consequence on how the whole entire GLVC standings is going to play out in the end.
Absolutely. I mean, and we were talking about it earlier with Quincy. If they can capitalize on this McKendry series, they might, while they still would want to win the UIS series, of course, they might almost have that spot for themselves if they cards fall right in the William Jewell Lewis series, because the benefit of those two playing is that they beat up on each other. So if the Hawks just keep winning, they're always gaining a game or adding on a game lead to the team that loses. So that's really huge for the Hawks, that if they can win and maybe even sweep the Bearcats potentially,
yeah,
which would be best case scenario, they could really start to set themselves apart. And instead of maybe being on that bubble as the 8 team and having to go play UIndy in the first round, maybe they could sneak their way into the 5 seed and find their way to playing the number 4 seed, Missouri St. Louis, who pretty much, from what it looks like, is, unless something drastic happens over these last two series, is probably going to be the number 4 seed.
Yeah.
So, but with that, we kind of talked about McKendree being eliminated, but there are teams that are on that bubble that still have a chance, that still have life. Those two teams that are on the outside looking in are the Missouri S&T Miners and the aforementioned Illinois Springfield Prairie Stars. Missouri S&T is only 3 games out of 8th place. Illinois Springfield is 1 game. So all very tight race. And considering that the difference between the 5th place team and the 10th place team in the conference is only 3 games, and then the 5th and the 9th is only a game, we're in for a really good finish in GLVC baseball.
There is a lot to be decided in these next weekends.
But there's a couple players, I think, that have been like a very crucial part of the Hawks' success. Not just this last weekend series, but just the entire season. Like Austin Simpson, we will continue to sing his praises. Man is batting .421, which for a first baseman is unheard of. You don't hear first baseman batting .400 like that.
No. You see him slugging with an OPS of 137. And absolutely, that is what you expect from a first baseman and more. But still, .421 batting average, that is incredible. With a .549 on base percentage, you don't get that every day out of a first baseman.
No, you don't. You know what else you don't get out of a first baseman every day? He's the only man to record a triple this year.
Wow.
So he's got, we call him the speed demon for a reason. There's no inside joke on that whatsoever. But then he also leads the team with 14 home runs. He's now third on the team in RBIs with 40, and we'll get into who jumped him on the team in a little bit because he deserves just as equal of a shout-out. On-base percentage is .549, so more than 50% of the time, actually about 55% of the time, he's getting on base, whether it be base hit, walk, hit by pitch. He's getting on base, which is a huge thing for a first baseman because we know how, watching Major League Baseball, especially your team, the Minnesota Twins, with a first baseman that just likes to strike out all the time.
Yeah, no, he's been a little disappointing this year.
Yeah, there's no sentiment towards Carlos Santana there, is there?
Nope.
But then we also got to give a shout-out to the true freshman himself, the freshman of the year that was awarded at the Mart Heinen Athletic Awards, David Broughton. He won the award for the guy's side. He shined bright this year, .340 average still, 5 home runs, 16 RBIs. He's still continuing to be the leadoff man the Hawks have needed.
Oh, yeah.
Dustin DuPont has been delivering in strides with his RBIs, leading the team with 50, second with 12 home runs. And then the man I wanted to give a shout to is JD Ortiz. Talk about a rebound season. Last year, JD came in transferring from the University of Illinois' Carbondale, so a D1 school, comes in. Didn't get a lot of playing time last year, and that came down to just how stacked the team was, but he struggled a lot last year. And this year, he has come completely into his own. He's batting .328, which if you'd have told a lot of people that were not on the team that he'd be doing that going into this year, I don't think anyone would have believed you. But he's proven all the doubters wrong, and I'm so happy to see it. He's now third on the team in home runs with 9. He's trying to get to that double digits, and just with the run he's on right now, I think he's going to get it any day now. And now he's second on the team with RBIs with 46, and eclipsing Austin Simpson, who's basically been like the MVP of the season for the Hawks. But JD Ortiz is now putting himself in that conversation, at least for the hitting category. And he's only 4 away from leading, so I mean, definitely watch out for JD Ortiz as we get going into this conference tournament. And then the aforementioned of Brock Boynton, Joe Huffman, just solid bats in the lineup that have delivered when the Hawks have needed them to.
Oh, yeah.
But then the pitching, the big thing that's going to hurt the Hawks Well, and it's great to see Kobe Essien starting to get back to his old ways, throwing heaters, striking guys out, not giving up many earned runs. Thing the Hawks are going to need the most, and I mean the most, going into this conference tournament, assuming they make it. And we'll have a lot more details on next week's episode because we'll be previewing the final series. But they're going to need their rotation arms, not just Kern, not just Essien, but they're going to need Kanzemius and whoever they choose as the number four guy. That has been the weakest part of the Hawks rotation, is that number four guy. They've had guys like Cade Ruffner go into that spot, and he's been getting hammered most all year. Aaron Smith, he's been getting slugged all year long. And then you've also got Seth West, who early on looked really good, and then it's just kind of gone backwards from there. So the Hawks are trying to just kind of this last minute trying to get this fourth starting pitcher spot under control. And that is not something that you can have going against a team like a UND, like a Maryville, like a Drury. You can't afford that going into the conference tournament. So if there's something the Hawks are going to really need to pay attention to as we approach this GLVC conference tournament, it's going to have to be that rotation, especially that end part, is going to have to nail down.
Oh, yeah, and it might not be hard. It might not be a bad idea to consider looking at a bullpen game, kind of get that opener style game to go through where everybody only pitches like two innings apiece. Maybe after you get through your guy that you've expected to be a starter, you bring everybody down to one inning, get your starter three innings, everybody else down to one inning. But I think that that's what's been the problem most of the year, I want to say. It's probably been the number of walks that we've given up. Because a lot of our guys, it looks like everybody throws the ball pretty hard. But with that comes a lot of control issues, which only kind of works its way out as you start to throw more and get more experience in. I mean, at the college level, a lot of these guys have a lot of experience. But that newfound power that comes with all of the like high-level workouts, all the muscle that they've been putting on, all the strength, all this newfound speed that they have on their pitches, it gets a little bit difficult to control. So if they can work around the walks that they give up, of course, a leadoff walk within the first one or two outs is kind of difficult to work around because after that, the contact moves them around the bases, right? But if they can minimize the early walks and they can keep the hits a little lower than what they've been given up, obviously a lot of our bullpen arms have WHIPs within the 1.5 to 2.5 range, which isn't necessarily what we want out of a pitcher, but it's manageable, and everybody has their starts where they can do really well or really bad. But if they can get everybody kind of on that good day where everybody's coming together at the same time, this is a very dangerous team.
Oh, absolutely. This we've kind of discussed even the last couple of weeks is that if the Hawks get hot, this is not a team that I would want to draw as like a number one or number two seed. I would not want to draw this team right out of the gate. Obviously, like we've mentioned, there's holes in the team that are going to need to be addressed within these next couple series. But besides those parts, I think this team is really, really good. I think they're really dangerous. And this is a team that's young. They're going to just get better next year. So definitely something to look out for. And then one last look at the conference standings. There is only one team that has officially clinched a playoff berth. That is the University of Indianapolis Greyhounds. They are the only team to officially clinch a berth in the postseason. Drury is on that cusp where if they get a win or a Illinois Springfield loss, then Drury would also clinch a spot in the postseason. So we're going to keep on the lookout for that. But everything else, it's pretty fair game. While we still have Maryville, who's in third, and Missouri St. Louis, who's in fourth, those two kind of seem like they're kind of going to be in that ballpark area where that's where they'll be at. But that 5-8 is going to be very interesting. So if you get a chance this weekend, check in on GLVC Baseball on the GLVC Sports Network because you are going to be in for a great, great final stretch of baseball games. But with that, we're going to take just a little moment here to give a little appreciation to our Lady Hawks, our women's lacrosse team. They were on their way to St. Louis, Missouri to go play Maryville in the semifinals of their first ever GLVC conference tournament appearance. So we wanted to give a little shout out to our Lady Hawks there. We're very proud of you. What you guys have had to go through all your years here at QU, especially the seniors who have been here pretty much since the program's inception. We are incredibly proud of you. And of course, we want our Hawks to walk away with a victory.
Absolutely.
And to keep going on this kind of miracle run and inspiring run at the end to send our seniors off in style. But regardless of how the season ends, this has been a tremendous successful year for our QU women's lacrosse, not just the team, but the program and the school as a whole. And we just wanted to give them a little time here to just say, we are so proud of you. You guys are awesome. And you deserve every bit of respect that anyone here on this campus can give you. And hopefully you know we're all in your corner for your games. But now it's time for what everyone is talking about. It's the NFL draft, CJ. Oh boy, this was interesting. This was an interesting first round, to say the least.
Yeah, I think I want to say the first five or six picks went about the way we kind of expected. So we'll kind of, there's one that I want to bring up a little bit. But other than that, it's been, the early draft was very, very good.
As it was usual, you kind of talked about first six picks were really kind of what everyone thought was going to be. Chicago Bears, they did it. They went with Caleb Williams, first overall, to almost everyone's, no one's shock. They did it.
They got their guy. He's
did.
The one.
And I'll talk about the quarterback as we get a little later on here and just how I think about Caleb Williams. And I have a little, you and I both have very biased opinions on how this guy's development's going to be. So, but we'll get back to that. Second, no shocker to, I think, anyone who had a genuine knowledge of football, Jayden Daniels is a Washington Commander.
Yes. That was kind of expected. Just about everywhere you went, all the mocks had him go in number two. He's just got so much potential.
I would argue, I think Jayden Daniels has more potential than Caleb Williams. Hot takes here. Hot takes here on the Hawk Talk podcast with Jayden Daniels having more of an upside than Caleb Williams. I just think the talent that Jayden Daniels faced in college in the SEC on the defensive side of the ball is going to benefit him a lot more early on in the NFL draft, and especially in the NFL season, than Caleb Williams, who was in the Pac-12, now going to be the Big Ten with the USC, but played in the Pac-12, and he just didn't have the defense because ACC and Big 12 football, the big problem with those two conferences, not Big 12, Pac-12, my mistake, is that they're just offense. There's no defense in the ACC or the Pac-12. There's no defense. And if you are a great defensive player, you'll get noticed in those conferences. But Caleb Williams hasn't been pressured like he is going to be going into the NFC North and in the entire NFC when it comes to defense, and especially with your guys' defense, with someone you guys have. But we'll get to your Minnesota Vikings a little here shortly. Third pick, people kept trying to say the Patriots are going to go out of it. I did not buy it for a second, and they went and took who I think is going to be another hot take, the biggest bust in the draft.
Yeah, and I can see that too. I think that they don't really have the supporting cast that Drake May needs to succeed at the next level. He also has a very low floor, even though he does have a very high ceiling as well. His floor is a lot lower.
Yeah, let's just say I wouldn't be surprised to see this guy making his way back to Pittsburgh, just like another North Carolina quarterback, and then backing up, and then maybe making his way back to Buffalo, because why not? So yeah, Drake May, I think it made sense for the rankings that the people were giving out the quarterbacks. I'm just not particularly high on him. I think he will be a bust, and I think that you kind of touched on it, that with losing the supporting cast of New England, this is not the New England Patriots of Tom Brady's heyday. This is a team building from the ground up again with an all-new head coach for the first time in almost, 23, 24 years since Belichick?
Yeah.
Was first their head coach, so I just think he's going into the wrong situation for himself.
And I mean, it's going to be really hard to find a target to throw to when your number one wide receiver is KJ Osborne.
Woof. Or if they bring back Devontae Parker, who's always injured.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I don't see any Drake May succeeding in New England, but credit to you guys for trying to find your quarterback. Fourth, in my opinion, the best wide receiver in this draft. He's going to be a Pro Bowler this year. I can feel it. He might even win Rookie of the Year. It's Marvin Harrison Jr. No explanation needed. This was a slam dunk for the Cardinals. Kyler Murray needed a target, and they got the best one in the draft.
Yeah, and to get that kind of number one wide receiver is very rare. I mean, this high in the draft, Marvin Harrison, wide receiver, we haven't seen a wide receiver go this high in the draft in a long time, haven't we?
I think you're right. I think there were talks, especially when Justin Fields was still on the Bears, Marvin Harrison could have gone number one. And I think the last time a wide receiver was this heavily touted and went this high, I think was Calvin Johnson. I think when he went second overall in 2008, 2007, it was one of those 2 years. It was before Stafford came around. I know that much. But that's the last time I can at least remember a wide receiver going this early.
And I mean, it's well-deserved. Marvin Harrison had a great season at Ohio State.
I'm wearing my Michigan Wolverines championship shirt here. Yeah, I have nightmares about Marvin Harrison Jr. still to this day. So, yeah, I would say this guy's pretty darn good. So, Cardinals, they did exactly as they should. They didn't trade back. They got their guy. Now let's see what he can do with Kyler Murray. Hopefully his career is not like Larry Fitzgerald and just wasted.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to rely completely on Kyler Murray because he's had his ups and downs. And ultimately, I think the Cardinals are still along the lines of trying to figure out their quarterback situation because not everybody has faith in Kyler Murray, even though he's got the athleticism of anybody in the world. You can name it. He's fast. He's short, but he can throw the ball a country mile. And just he has the talent to get it done. It just comes down to whether or not he can execute the plays that the coaches give to him.
And keep him off call of duty.
Yeah, that's
him off call of duty. Have him studying game film. But I know this one, this next pick, the fifth overall pick with the Los Angeles Chargers choosing Joe Alt is one that you have been wanting to talk about, CJ. So take the floor, buddy.
Yeah, so, I mean, good pick, of course. Joe Alt had a good season. He's got a lot of athletic ability. He's huge, and he's got a lot of strength on him. But at the same time, he is very, very tall. And those defensive ends can absolutely take advantage of him very easily by getting really low because he'll just lose his leverage. And one thing that I noticed, Michael Parsons on Bleacher Report's podcast or live stream during the draft was going on. Micah actually said that it's easier to get under those really tall offensive tackles along the outside. And defensive ends kind of take complete advantage of it. And he actually said that it's a little easier to get under them to get to the quarterback. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it kind of just comes down to the talent and just the strength of the defensive end. I think Micah Parsons is just that good to where it honestly doesn't matter who you have blocking him kind of thing unless you double team him. I think, though, in a straight one-on-one, but you've put like a Joe Alt against, I'll go with my boys in the Packers and just give an example, like a Lucas Van Ness. I think Joe Alt would work well against a Lucas Van Ness, someone who's not truly a explosive playmaker. That's who a Joe Alt will do well against. His big task is going to be, can he successfully block guys like Micah Parsons, Chris Jones, and eventually, considering they are in, I mean, Chris Jones is the big one because, I mean, they are in the AFC West with Kansas City. Like, you're going to have to be stuck with him. Also, Christian Wilkins, now with the Raiders. So, and then Denver always finds a way to have a good defense year in, year out, except when Vance Joseph's the defensive coordinator. Then the team just doesn't have a defense because why bother have a defense? But I think Joe Alt will be fine. I think the pick is what needed to be done. I don't see another offensive lineman in this draft that's better than Joe Alt. And I think that if you're the Chargers, you can get a wide receiver in the second round. And I think that's what they're going to do. I think they'll take in a wide receiver round two. They need to protect their golden goose in Justin Herbert. You don't pay that kind of money to Justin Herbert to not protect him. And it's the big reason why I think Caleb Williams is going to be a bust. Hey-oh. But that is why I think that the Chargers did make the right pick here. If they weren't going to go with Alt, the guy that the Giants ended up drafting next, which was Malik Nabers, a wide receiver of LSU, would have been the guy they wanted to take. But overall, Joe Alt, I think it's a solid pick. It's just going to be interesting to see how he pans out. But he's not, by far, the worst pick we've had in this draft. And we'll get to some of those.
Oh, yeah.
We will get to some of those. I mean, next one, we just briefly touched on Malik Nabers. Giants need a wide receiver.
Great pick. They needed somebody.
I mean, second best wide receiver in the draft. Giants need a wide receiver. Whether it's Daniel Jones that's the future, whether it's Drew Locke, or whoever they decide to go forward with, if they decide to draft someone in the second or later rounds, which I wouldn't be surprised to see them try.
Yeah.
But it's the right pick.
Yeah, I think they're going to ride with Daniel Jones just to see how it works out. Because obviously this season wasn't a very good season. If they get that kind of performance out of him again, of course they're going to have another shot at a quarterback in the next couple of years. So I think they're just going to let it ride and see what happens and then just react based off of that.
Tank for Shedeur Sanders next year.
Oh, God.
seeing prime time in a New York hoodie will, I think, hurt some Cowboys fans if they see that. But next one, this was an interesting one. And I wish Tony was here. I mean, he went back home for the weekend. So I wish he was here to discuss his pick. But I'll try to address like what we have talked about. The Tennessee Titans were at number 7, and they chose J.C. Latham.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting pick. I think he was projected to go a little lower, wasn't he? Yeah, he was projected to go in the mid first round. But, of course, the Titans kind of needed an O-lineman. So,
I don't think it's that the fact they drafted an O-lineman, because that, I think, was exactly what they need to do. Mayo man, Will Levis himself, needs protection. I don't think they needed a receiver. You've got D-Hop, and yeah, D-Hop's getting up there in age, but it's D-Hop. You got to trust him, especially now that you've added Calvin Ridley in there. I mean, you've got a wide receiver room there if you're the Titans. Like, there's no need to panic about the wide receiver room. And then Westbrook Akine has been a good wide receiver 3, so there was no, like, desperate need for a wide receiver. Helps, but there was no desperate need. Lineman was the right decision, especially losing King Henry to free agency.
Yes.
And having to deal with your running back duo of Tony Pollard, and I think it was it Tajay Spears, was it?
Tajay Spears,
thank you. And then maybe Hassan Haskins is a 3. Like, that running back room is so, so inconsistent.
Yeah, they need help, of course.
And it's not like a Derrick Henry where it's a, oh, this defender's coming right at him, and he's going to stiff arm him and send him into the nether realm. Or
yeah, break about 5 tackles, get like 10 yards down the field before or after contact.
Like, you aren't going to be able to do that with the running backs they have on the roster. Even if they go and draft one in the later rounds, that guy probably is not going to be able to do that right out of the gate. So they needed an O-lineman. The question was, should they have gone Olufoshinu, who the Jets ended up getting? Should they have gone him?
You know, I don't know too much about the O-lineman, but Foshanu, he is a beast. He had a great season. He was looking really good. I'm surprised he dropped all the way down to 11, just to put it honestly. I thought it was going to be between 7 and 8, but that's just my opinion. I think we're going to talk about the Falcons in a second, but... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, J.C. Latham, good. He's a good player. I just don't know if this was the wrong choice. Again, we'll see it play out. But, yeah, Atlanta, that's where we are now. 8th overall, the Atlanta Falcons select quarterback out of Washington, Michael Penix Jr. My brain stopped working for a moment when I heard quarterback.
Yeah, no, whatever the front office for the Falcons was smoking, I want some of it. That was an absolutely horrible pick, in my opinion. They had no need for a quarterback after signing Kirk Cousins for 4 years. And they may be doing the kind of thing the Packers were doing with Jordan Love, but at the same time, 4 years early is not something that should happen.
Well, and you're talking about the money they spend on Kirk Cousins. This isn't just like a Taylor Heinicke thing where they where the Falcons went and signed Taylor Heinicke last year. 3 years, like $15 million. It's not that. This is 4 years, $180 million, with $100 million of that being guaranteed.
Yeah, so they are absolutely locked in our Kirk Cousins.
So I don't know. Now this makes me really think about the front office and the morale of the entire organization of the Falcons, because they have footage of Arthur Blank coming up to the Atlanta Falcons GM after they called Michael Penix, announced the pick, talking to him, and it looked like Arthur Blank was really upset. So how I'm interpreting this whole situation is that Arthur Blank wanted Kirk Cousins, but the GM wanted Michael Penix. And while they've got both, they're two clashing visions. And I think this is going to take a team that could have been contending for the NFC South next year in a very weak division to nothingness, because there's no cohesion. There's no vision that's united towards the future. As much as we give the Dolphins for being doing moronic things when it comes to Tua, at least there's a vision there that, whether it be the owner, the GM, the head coach, this is our guy. But in Atlanta, it looks like you have a owner that wants one thing. You've got a GM that wants one thing. You've got a head coach that wants one thing. It's not meshing. And I think that this whole draft cycle is just going to expose the Falcons for the disorganized franchise that they are.
Yeah, and of course, the front office plays a huge part in a team's success. But, I mean, just look at the team that they have in the division that they're in. I mean, at least this year, next year, I think at least while they have Kirk Cousins, they're going to find success. Because, I mean, obviously being a Vikings fan, I'm a little biased. But Kirk Cousins, he's not a superstar. But he's a guy that can fix holes, he can win games. He can put the ball where it needs to go. He's a star. He's not a superstar. But he can go out there and he can win games for you. And that's what they need to do. They are in a division right now that is arguably one of the worst in the NFL. And they have the offensive core needed to win that division with a defense that's going to get the job done. And it just comes down to, are they able to get somebody at the quarterback position that can run the offense smooth enough and just get the ball where it needs to go? And they're going to have that in Kirk Cousins. Whether or not they're going to have that in 4 years when they move on to Michael Penix at 28 years old is a different story. But obviously, I don't know what they were thinking with that pick. It was not a good decision.
And I kind of think you touched on it, like they're trying to do the Packers mold, but the thing that the Packers versus what the Falcons are doing here is the Packers had two of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen grace the field, teach their next successor, or teach in the case of Favre to Rodgers. But when you're having greatness versus someone who's good, maybe even really good, I don't think it's going to have the same impact. And also, the thing that's really risky about this for the Falcons, and this is why, actually, I wouldn't have thought it would have been a terrible idea for them to take J.J. McCarthy, it's this. This is why. Kirk Cousins, coming off a torn ACL. That is a very good possibility that rears its ugly head again this year. There might be lingering damage in that injury, and he might re-injure it. Who knows? Michael Penix has been dealing with injuries over the course of this last year. Nothing major, but the fact that he's getting injured in these minor little ways through that entire previous college season, and that as soon as he got pressure in his face, he kind of just folded, I would say that's a huge room for concern when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons. If they were going to draft a quarterback, I think you should have done someone who's healthy, doesn't have a history of injuries, if you're going to go for someone to replace Kirk Cousins. They went injury prone, and then they have Taylor Heinicke as QB3. Overall, good quarterback room, but you don't need three good quarterbacks, or at least an average one in Taylor Heinicke's case.
Right.
So it just from a logistics point, it doesn't make any sense. And obviously, maybe we sit here next year and say, oh, well, Kirk Cousins got hurt, and Michael Penix is a superstar. We might say that, That is completely possible.
Then they're going to be $100 or $100 million in dead cap. I mean, it's not going to look good for the cap space. But
nope.
If that does happen and they get a superstar in Michael Penix, front office is going to be praised, even though they're going to be $100 million in cap purgatory. If Michael Penix looks good, they're going to look good. They just aren't going to have a supporting cast around him because they aren't going to have any money to go out and pay wide receivers or running backs or tight ends the money that they've been asking of lately.
I can guarantee you Kyle Pitts is going to want targets and he's going to want some money.
And I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to give him targets. He's been a very big tight end passer his entire career with the Minnesota Vikings. So,
indeed, especially, though he didn't really play much with Hockenson this year, did he? Did he play much with him this year?
No, Kirk was injured most of the season. He was out half of the year, basically.
That's what I thought. I didn't know. I remember they traded for him last year, but I didn't know exactly when that happened. But now we move on to number 9, and they're already declaring themselves the champions of the offseason for the second straight year. Drafting at number 9, once again, the Chicago Bears. They take another man out of Washington, but this is a wide receiver, Romeo Dunze. This is a wide receiver that is the biggest question mark for me going into this draft. And this isn't even just from a Packers fan, like, oh, he's a Bear, so I automatically don't like him. I wasn't a big fan of Odunze already at Washington. I think he has way too many drops that he makes. He's got a little too much butterfingers for his hands. He's got talent. I will never deny that. He had first-round talent. My question is what are the Bears looking for this season? What are they looking for? Are they looking for a team that's to contend this year, or are they looking for a team that's going to contend years down the line? Because you got a great wide, you got an undeniable good wide receiver room. You got Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Romeo Odunze. And then you got a running back of DeAndre Swift, now Caleb Williams at quarterback. This Bears team is going to be the definition of boom or bust. There's no middle ground with this team. And Romeo Odunze just is a wild card where I don't know where the Bears are going to take it. Did the Bears have a good draft night? Yes, they are one of the big winners of draft night, along with some other teams. But they are one of those teams where I need to see how this team comes together before I declare anything. And we'll see that in week one of the regular season, because Caleb Williams will start week one. Romeo Odunze will start week one. Keenan Allen, assuming he doesn't get hurt again. Or DJ Moore. We've seen what DJ Moore can do if he's targeted. So Cole Kmet at tight end, not to mention as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Bears do. And obviously, from a Vikings fan, I want to hear your perspective on this as well.
You see, unfortunately, as a Vikings fan, I think it's a good pick. They've got Keenan Allen. They have a very complimentary wide receiver room, in my opinion. They've got DJ Moore, who's the deep speed threat guy, kind of guy. They've got Keenan Allen, who's going to be the route runner, the short space, kind of create as much as you can type of guy. And they've got, now they have Romeo Odunze. And he's kind of the big wide receiver that you can kind of target and just, he's going to take up space and you just throw it up there and he's going to come down with it. Again, butterfingers is an issue, but he can work that out in the NFL a little bit just throughout training camp. But overall, height 6'3", weight 212. That's a pretty good size for a wide receiver. So I'm thinking they've got a pretty complimentary wide receiver room. Their offense is going to be something special this year. And unfortunately for me, I think they're going to have a really good season coming up next year. It all just comes down to how well Caleb Williams does handling the pressure and the defensive schemes of the NFL.
Absolutely. Now we get to the pick that's very close to your heart.
Yeah.
With the 10th overall pick, the Minnesota Vikings take the quarterback of the future out of Michigan. It breaks my heart. I hate everything about the Minnesota Vikings for doing this, being a Michigan fan. It's J.J. McCarthy.
You know, it was something that we needed to do. We've been needing a quarterback since Kirk Cousins signed his extension. Basically, we're just resetting the clock. We're hoping that we brought in Kevin O'Connell to be our kind of quarterback's coach because we need somebody that's going to be able to build up a quarterback on that rookie deal give him the confidence that he needs, kind of walk him through all the schemes, all of his reads. And one thing that they've been saying about J.J. McCarthy is that, of course, he's a winner. Can't deny that. He's had a great career. He's got one throwing speed is what they say. That throwing speed is very hard and very powerful, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But when it comes to those short routes and he throws it really hard and it goes 100 miles an hour off the wide receiver's hand, it can cause a couple of interceptions. It can get batted up in the air. It could cause for a couple problems in the red zone. But the thing is, though, he, despite being unproven, he showed a lot of what he could do at the combine, and he had a great combine. He showed that he knows how to make passes. He can scramble well. He's a good decision maker in the pocket. Even if Michigan didn't necessarily trust him all that well, it's something that we can build up in our team, on our coaching staff is going to be able to do a really good job with him, I think. So I don't like that we had to trade up to get him for that just one spot, giving up as much as we did. But I think it was necessary because right behind us, the Broncos also wanted a quarterback really bad, and they were probably going to make the same deal with the Jets, and the Jets just wanted to move one spot rather than risk us taking somebody that they had in mind at number 10 or number 11. So ultimately, I think it was a great pick for us. We needed to get it done. We went out and got our guy, and I think he's going to be good with us for a long time coming. So
I think my reaction as a Packers fan when I posted on Instagram sums up my feelings on this very well. Kill me. Kill me, kill me, kill me. I'm going to watch J.J. McCarthy be a superstar. I'm going to be happy. At the same time, I want to rip my eyes out because I have to watch him in a Vikings uniform because of your purple incarnations.
Yeah, but guess what? For the next decade, the NFC North is going to be the premier division in the NFL.
I don't want that. I want my cheesehead reign to continue. I want my cheesehead reign at the top.
But hey, good football for the next 10 years at least.
I guess so. We already talked about the Jets getting Alu Fashanu, Penn State offensive tackle.
Great value at 11.
Second best offensive tackle projected in the draft. Need a guy to protect Aaron Rodgers. Easy dub. Speaking of, though, on the other side, when it comes to an L, this is what I think is one of the biggest losers of the draft, that Denver Broncos, with the 12th overall pick, draft Bo Nix, quarterback, Oregon. Bust alert.
Yeah, that's going to be a nightmare. Right now, their quarterback room is what, Zach Wilson and Bo Nix?
Bo Nix.
Arguably the best in the league.
Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci DiGucci. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, that's the meme team right there, for sure.
It's something. And I have no idea what Sean Payton is doing. I don't think I have any idea what they're doing. They're just hoping something works.
Yeah, they're just taking a shot in the dark. It's a big-time prayer that he's going to work out, especially for the value they took him at. I think they honestly could have probably taken him in round two because he would have made it that low, in my opinion.
The only team that may have taken him, may have, was the Raiders, which were the next pick. So if the Broncos... I think that's the only team that truly was left that they had to worry about taking him before they had their next pick. And I think, because if we're looking here on the draft board, actually, I don't see a second round pick for the Denver Broncos. I don't see one here. So from the looks of things, they don't even have a second round pick. So it looks like for the Broncos, they were like, we don't have a second rounder. We're not trading for a second rounder. We got to go now. But at the same time,
it would have been so much better if they just traded back from that pick, because looking at the guy that was taken right behind him, Brock Bowers is potentially one of the best players in this draft class. And I know probably a lot of teams would have paid a very premium price to move up just to get him, because just look at that. He's been amazing. And I think the Raiders... They took a tight end last year in Michael Mayer, but right now their two tight end formation is looking like the best in the league between Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer.
And not to mention the Raiders are going to have Davante Adams as wide receiver one. And then, I mean, Jacoby Myers leaves a lot to be desired as wide receiver two, but it's still a solid arm to have, or hand to have, rather.
Well, to my butt in fantasy last year.
I mean, the only thing the Raiders have a problem with is their quarterback.
Yeah.
You cannot tell me that the Raiders legitimately think Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew is the future of the franchise. There's no way you could convince me of that. After they just spent a ton of money cutting Jimmy Garoppolo. There's just no way. I just don't see the potential that they saw. The games that they scored a lot, it really wasn't Aiden O'Connell. It was Josh Jacobs, and he's gone. So I don't know what the Raiders are doing if because the talent they have on this roster, like, I don't think Adams is going to be there next year after next season. I don't think he's going to be there. I think he's going to want out because this team has no direction.
Just look at where they were stuck at in the draft, though. They kind of got left with having to take the best player available. And they might end up trading somebody that they already have at a premium position, like Davante Adams, just for picks, because they need a quarterback that badly and they just need to load up for a move early in the draft. Or they just might be tanking for the next best quarterback in the next year's draft. So
I know, but the problem is, like, I know people have talked about Shedeur Sanders. I made the joke earlier, but I'm not impressed by Shedeur Sanders.
Oh, no.
I think people are way too high on him, and I think that while we might have one of the better QB drafts this year, I don't think we're getting this next year. So it's being very risky to not take a quarterback, because honestly, looking at it, Drake May would probably be, or Bo Nix would probably be the best quarterback in next year's draft if we were to compare their talents right now. So what are you looking for if you're the Raiders? Like Spencer Rattler? Hoping Jordan Travis is okay in the later rounds? Like, they have the 11th pick in the second round, so, I mean, I would think they're going to go quarterback, but...
I would think they could trade back in the second round to get Spencer Rattler later in the second round, because I don't think he's going to go that early.
I don't think so either, and I don't think he's got the talent to do it. Because I think he proved at Oklahoma and even at South Carolina, he just... Unless you put all the pieces around him, he's not going to do anything. And yes, while you got Tay Adams, Myers, Mayer, now Bowers, I don't think they have a big running back anymore now that Josh Jacobs is gone. I have to look at that, but, and if you want to look at it, you can, but I don't see a way the Raiders, I mean, the pick's good. Let's not get that mixed up. Brock Bowers, phenomenal pick for a team that needs weapons. I understand it from that point. It's just my big concern with the Raiders is just quarterback, and that was not their fault. It's just where they landed in the draft order and who was in front of them prevented them from potentially taking their QB of the future. That could be a shining superstar. This is more of a, it's not the team's fault. It's just circumstance fault.
Yeah.
So
they're kind of stuck in a bad spot there.
So when it comes to quarterback, I don't know. You're laughing over there.
Oh yeah, because I just looked at the Raiders running back room, and you won't believe who their number one and number two running backs are.
I know they have. Is it Zadir White?
Oh yeah, he's probably their number one. I didn't get that low in the roster yet.
Speak.
But guess who their number one is?
Oh, I know. I think I've heard the name, but I don't remember.
Alexander Mattison.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I just talked about this last night with my buddy.
Yep.
And then who else
Alexander
is there?
Mattison, Amir Abdullah, who was a former Viking.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, who did not do well. Yeah, it's...
This running back room looks delicious.
And then there's Amir White, yeah. It's not looking very good. I think White could probably do well, but it's just not a very good running back room in general.
I completely agree. There's nothing here. Like, other than Zamir White, there's no real potential in that room. So I mean, you're basically telling whoever's the quarterback this year, this is the offensive weapons we are giving you.
Check down central. I mean, they're built for it. So
they don't have Joe Flacco. They can't do the check down.
They have two tight ends though. They have two star tight ends.
But they don't have check down Flacco.
They don't have Flacco.
We love the checkdowns.
And they can make his job very easy by saying, here's your reads. Davante Adams deep. If he's not there, you have two checkdowns in Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers. Or you just hand it off and lose 3 yards to Alexander Mattison. That's how it is.
Yep, that's pretty much the Raiders' whole situation. They, unfortunate turn of events for them. It's the right pick. Again, keep prefacing this. Right pick, bad circumstance. Then, I mean, the Saints, uninspired. Talisi Fuaga, I think is how you say his name, from Oregon State.
I think so, yeah.
Good pick. It's whatever.
They needed it.
Layer 2, Latu, defensive end of UCLA to the Colts. I think the Colts messed up here.
Really think so.
Bad. Reason why. Latu, they mentioned it on the draft board. He has had a history of injuries. He's missed 2 seasons in his college career. And his medical doctors have diagnosed that if he has one more severe injury, I forget to what part of his body it is, they said his career could be in jeopardy. The Colts are risking a lot on this draft pick when there was a guy that would be picked 2 picks later that would have fit their needs 1,000 times better. That's how I feel about that. Latu has potential. Absolutely. Most first-round talents do. I think this one is a loss for the Colts, and I think this is a bust waiting to happen.
Of course, it's all going to come down to health, but he's got the ability needed to get it done in the NFL.
But then again, we see, I think it's Tajana Carter, who was the Bengals running back from like 30 years ago. Highly touted draft pick. Had all the talent. Got hurt in week 1 and never played a game. I think he played like 2 games left in his career. In the regular season, that was it. So that's why I'm very concerned if I'm a Colts fan right now about this pick.
Yeah, and we can look at...
especially who they passed up.
Yeah. Our Vikings, we deal with... what's his name? I can't even think of it. Louis Cine. That's our closest example because he had the talent in the first round, but just injured the first week and out the rest of the year.
And then we go to the halfway point. Byron Murphy, the second of Texas, defensive tackle, Seahawks. Not a bad pick. It's not who I'd have chose, but it's a good pick. He's a first-round talent.
Let's talk about this for a second. It took 15 picks in this year's draft before we ended up getting a defensive player.
Defense is underutilized, and it's pathetic. Yeah. It's pathetic that people don't actually think about it. There's a reason why the expression is defense wins championships.
Because it does.
It does. I know this because I'm a Packers fan, and my defense has been one of the worst in the NFL for the last 20-something years, and that's why we have 1 Super Bowl. So, yeah, I think I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two. We are farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. But, yeah, it's sad.
It's a little disappointing because it seems like the league is just moving towards entertaining the fans as much as probably more than it is actually focusing on winning games.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment, and it's really sad to see. I mean, we already saw it with the Taylor Swift stuff this last year. The league cares more about publicity than they do actual football.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Now we get to your second pick. You guys got, in my opinion, the steal of the draft. You got Dallas Turner.
Probably the best pass rusher in this draft. He was absolutely amazing in college. We moved up from 23 to 17 to get him, and we gave up a lot to get him. I want to say it was like 2 third-rounders, a 4th and a 5th or something. And just the amount of times that the Vikings have traded in this draft, I think I saw it somewhere where the value of all the picks that we've given up, we haven't given up more than a 2nd-rounder, but all the value that we've added up over this year and next year's draft, next year we have a 1st-round and 2 fifths, and that's it. 2 fifths. So we have given up a lot to move up early into this 1st-round, and the value that we've given up, I saw it somewhere, it's equivalent to the 5th overall pick. So it comes down to this. Would you spend a 5th overall pick on Dallas Turner?
Because I'm old school and I like defense? Absolutely. If my team, you guys got your quarterback. Like, that's the thing. You guys got your quarterback now. There's no reason to hold on to that draft cap. I mean, you got Justin Jefferson in your wide receiver room. You got Jordan Addison in your wide receiver room. You got Hockenson at tight end. Your running back room is, God forbid, Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones and Ty Chandler. We love Ty Chandler.
You may love Ty Chandler. I love Aaron Jones, and it breaks my heart that I have to watch him run 200 yards on the Packers now. But so I think if you're the Vikings, the time is now. Screw it. Go get him. He's the best pass rusher. In my opinion, he's the best defensive player in this draft. Go get him. Shore up the defense. Get Daniel Hunter's replacement. See what magic he can work.
Oh, yeah. He's going to do great under Brian Flores' system, too, because we send him on every single play. I don't think there's going to be a snap that he's not pass rushing.
Yep.
And if he does, he drops back really well, too, in pass coverage. So, well, sort of well. He had a couple highlights where he dropped back and made a couple plays. But overall, his pass rushing ability is absolutely amazing. We're going to be utilizing that to our fullest extent. And I think we went out and got our guy, and that's exactly what we needed to do in this situation. So there was no way we were getting a defensive end or a defensive tackle at a premier spot at 23. Because in the next few picks, we see two defensive ends. And he wouldn't have been there if we would have stayed at 23 either. So
we're going to, since we're kind of getting running a little low on time here, we're going to quickly just kind of go through some picks here. Say good, say bad, not go too much analysis until we get to 25, which we will get to. Number 18, the Bengals take Amarius Mims, offensive tackle, Georgia. Good pick. Protect Joe Burrow.
Yeah, they needed that. Burrow's been under a lot of stress lately because of their offensive line.
Yep, one of the most pressured and sacked quarterbacks in the league. Los Angeles Rams at 19 take Jared Verse, defensive end out of Florida State. Good pick. Need someone to take the reins from Aaron Donald now that he is retired and is about to enter the NFL Hall of Fame in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Good pick.
There's nobody that can replace Aaron Donald, but he's going to be probably very, very good at the next level.
Number 20, the Steelers. Steelers could have gone anywhere at this pick, and it probably would have worked. They went offensive tackle. If you don't know what you're going to go with a lineman because it goes well almost every time, and it's going to work out, hopefully. Troy Fatanu,
I think.
Offensive tackle, Washington. Good. It's okay. It's a
yeah.
Pick. Not the big name I was thinking it would
now
be.
Now it just depends on who they're protecting.
It'll be Russ, and then it'll be Fields. That's my saying going into this year.
Yeah.
Miami Dolphins at 21. I like the player. I don't think it was the right position. Chop Robinson, great player. I think they needed to go corner. They needed someone to replace Xavier Howard. And I think while Chop Robinson is going to be amazing and it's going to help that defensive line of the Dolphins, I don't think when it comes to what they needed a corner. And I think the Eagles took the best corner in the draft right after them.
Yeah, we're just hoping that Chop Robinson becomes a very, very good player because defensive ends, if you can get pressure on a quarterback really quickly, you can make the secondary look very good. But it comes down to whether or not that defensive line is as good as they're hoping it can be.
Absolutely. And then the Eagles, they go with Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback of Toledo. Good pick. Eagles cornerback room is a dumpster fire, to say the least.
Yeah, that is a great pick that he even fell that low. He was projected to go mid first, and he fell a lot longer than I thought he would.
Now, a bit of a surprise at 23. I mean, it's not a surprise in the position. It's a surprise of who it is. Jacksonville Jaguars take wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. I thought Xavier Worthy was going here.
See, I think that speed is a great part of a wide receiver's game, but there is a difference between game speed and flat speed. And I think that if you can find a guy that succeeds very well in college, even if he doesn't have that kind of flat, straight speed that Xavier Worthy does, he should be able to succeed fairly well at the NFL level. Because we can see it. Henry Ruggs didn't really get his chance in the NFL, but we see it. Who was the guy? Not Rice. There was, I want to say the Chiefs drafted somebody a few years ago, and it wasn't Rashee Rice. That was really, really fast. That just didn't work out in the NFL, and he fell to like wide receiver 3. But that straight speed isn't always the number one answer and doesn't always make you the best receiver out there. So I think Brian Thomas, he's one of those all-around guys. If you can get somebody that's all-around, he can turn out to be a great receiver.
Fair enough, I suppose. And then 24, of course, they have to, every year, go before the Packers, whether it be trade up or something. They take Terry Arnold, cornerback Alabama. It's a slam dunk pick. one of the best corners in this draft, sent to them on a silver platter. All they had to do was trade up with Dallas, pretty much flip picks, and they go and get a corner that's going to terrorize NFC wide receivers for the next 4 years. And now we get to my pick.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys were doing with this pick.
With the 25th overall pick, the Green Bay Packers select offensive tackle Jordan Morgan.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure what you guys are doing with this pick, because still on the board was Cooper DeJean, who would work very, very well in the slot, and you guys do not have a very good slot corner or even a number two corner for that.
I'm well aware. I like Jordan Morgan, and I don't hate him being drafted by the Packers. I was actually wanting the Packers to draft him. Not here.
Yeah.
He is someone that the Packers were that desperate. They have 2 second-round picks. Why didn't you just wait to take him and take... It's not even Cooper DeJean that makes me really upset.
Kool-Aid was on the board, too.
It's Kool-Aid McKinstry. Or Nate Wiggins. Like, the Packers need a corner. Eric Stokes can't stay healthy. Carrington Valentine, he's good, but he proved last year he can't hang with a number two receiver. A true number two receiver like a Chris Godwin or a Brandon Ayuk. And then you have Corey Ballantyne? Like, I just don't understand. Like, I get Deebach need to replace the left tackle, but there was no real need to replacement on the offensive line. Like, yeah, Rashid Walker did great at left tackle at the second half of the year. Zach Tom's been a godsend at the right tackle. Jenkins and Ryan have been great at the left guard and right guard, respectively, after John Runyon left for New York to beat the Giants on a 3-year deal. Josh Myers is the weakest part as the center, but even he's not that bad.
Yeah, these are the kind of situations in the NFL draft where you really want to see your front office's big board, because nowhere in the country was Jordan Morgan projected to be in the first round, I'm pretty sure.
There was nowhere I was seeing that he was going to be taken even in the second. Green Bay, I don't hate the guy. I think he's a good pick in terms of any other round, but they went and chose a guy that scouts have said is a late second, early third, and there's no convincing me. I've heard Packer fans, I've been getting arguments with Packer fans. There's nothing that you can say to convince me that this is not a reach. And unless the Packers get lucky, because they have the 9th pick in the second round, unless they get really lucky and Kool-Aid or DeJean or even, I think it's Rakeshaw, Mizzou, falls to them, if Green Bay doesn't take one of them at that pick, I legit might lose my mind.
This is where you kind of hope that you guys move up in the second round just so you can assure that you guys get a Kool-Aid McKinstry or Cooper DeJean, somebody like that. I think Tyler Newbin's still on the board, isn't he?
I think he probably is.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, no, you guys could use a safety that could probably drop into the slot as well, but you guys just need secondary help, so.
I don't understand what Goody's doing. If there's one thing I will always tell people, is I think Raul Gutekunst has helped build this Packers team to a team that's been a contender year in, year out, even after Ted Thompson left, now after Aaron Rodgers left. I think also at the same time, he's to blame for why this team didn't win a Super Bowl with A-Rod during those two MVP seasons. So, but there's that pick. And then just the last few picks. Tampa Bay Buccaneers take Graham Barton, center of Duke. Good pick. Need an O-lineman. Arizona Cardinals get their second pick. They take who I think is a great player, Darius Robinson, defensive lineman, Missouri. The Cardinals need a defensive lineman. They got a coach who's a former D coordinator. Good pick. Then, who thought giving Patrick Mahomes Xavier Worthy was a good idea? Oh, that's right. The Buffalo Bills did.
Yeah. Trading a pick like that to your rival when you guys need a wide receiver yourself is not a very good idea. And it probably turned out to be the worst-case scenario for the Bills, because they're going to end up seeing these guys in the Super Bowl probably. So,
or at least down the line in the playoffs. I just don't understand. I think Xavier Worthy is one of the most underrated wide receivers in this draft class, and they just gave him right to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. They have no wide receivers in their room right now. Both the Bills and the Chiefs. But Xavier Worthy is going to make a great addition. Hopefully he can, well, I didn't see his hands in college, but it's not hard to have better hands than the Kansas City Chiefs this year.
It's not hard to have better hands than Kadarius Toney. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, pretty much. So hopefully he should come in, be an immediate upgrade over Kadarius Toney, and probably is going to make them a lot better of a team.
Absolutely. And then the 29th pick, the Dallas Cowboys pick offensive lineman Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Micah Parsons did not like this pick at all.
No, I don't think that they really needed an offensive lineman just because their offensive line has been amazing year in and year out for the last like 5 years. So I think they've done, I think they could have done something else.
And yeah,
had a better option.
And Tyron Smith left them, but he was hurt almost all year and they still had one of the best offensive lines. So I don't understand what the Cowboys were doing with this pick. I would have been doing push-ups just like Micah Parsons would have been doing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd have punched my, put my fist through a wall. 30th pick. This is a beautiful pick. I don't think he's the best of the corners, but I think it's a great pick for what they needed. Baltimore Ravens take Nate Wiggins, cornerback Clemson. Great pick. They needed another pass defender. They have Kyle Hamilton in the safety position. They needed a corner. They got him. Great pick for the Ravens.
Great value. Great spot for it. It's a premier position, and they didn't even have to put up a premier price for it either. Got a great player, the 30th pick in the draft. So,
and then for the last two picks, they're both receivers. The San Francisco 49ers, I think, with the second worst pick of the draft, worse than the Packers, but not worse than the Penix pick. Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver, Florida. They really are thinking about letting go of Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, aren't they?
I think that they just said, here, grab the Florida wide receiver, and they just, the, whoever was making the phone calls picked the wrong one. Because Keon Coleman was right there, too. And that's when you tell your, you tell the person making the phone calls to
pack your stuff, get out of this office, you're fired.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that pick. That's all I have to say because we're running low on time. Right before we get to the last
pick. Either Kyle Shanahan is a genius or that was a terrible decision.
Pretty much. And knowing Kyle Shanahan, it's probably going to be a great pick because that's just how this works. Last pick in the first round, Carolina Panthers trade back into the first round to from the Buffalo Bills to take another wide receiver, Xavier Leggett, South Carolina.
They needed a wide receiver. Bad.
But I Buffalo, you do realize you don't have Stephon Diggs anymore. You don't have Gabe Davis anymore.
Yeah, no, and Stephon Diggs doesn't seem like a huge loss to them for some reason. Even though he was one of the best wide receivers while he was with them and with the Vikings, Stephon Diggs, he seems like the last few years he's just kind of fallen off a little bit, and that's a hot take, but still, he wasn't getting any kind of production towards the end of the year, and the Buffalo Bills were winning without him. And I would know, he was on my fantasy team. It sucked.
I know, but it's just not just that. Who's Josh Allen going to throw the ball to?
Yeah, no,
is he gonna throw
that's
the
worst
to?
Part, because he was doing good with Gabe Davis and, what was it, Dalton Kincaid?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so.
Their first round pick from last year, their tight end, Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah, he was doing good with Gabe Davis, Dalton Kincaid, and whoever else they had, a wide receiver. But now that Gabe Davis is gone, they've just got only, like, one option.
I'm going to read you the wide receiver room for the Buffalo Bills, and you tell me whether or not these guys are good. First guy, KJ Hamler.
He's not good, but he's not the worst guy.
Mac Hollins.
No.
Andy Isabella.
Oh. No.
We finally have a little bit of relief here. Curtis Samuel.
He's washed.
Really? You're going to say that? Okay.
Yeah.
Khalil Shakir.
He's the guy that's going to bring them somewhere. I'm pretty high on Khalil Shakir. He did really good last year with them after they started not throwing the ball to Stephon Diggs. He kind of stepped up into that do-it-all kind of role, that deep ball role. He's pretty good wide receiver right now.
Tyrell Shavers.
No.
Justin Shorter.
No.
Brian Thompson.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I'm a Bills fan, I'm pressing the big red panic button. You have the first pick in the second round, but I'm pressing that big red panic button because you just lost almost every single top-tier receiver in this draft. And unless they go, if they trade back again or don't take a wide receiver, if I'm Josh Allen, I am jumping into trying to think of the big Great Lake that's right next to New York. I'm forgetting geography. That's how I'm upset I am about this, how bad this team has been drafting.
I can't even help you there. I'm lost.
Okay, I'm bringing up Google Maps here.
I'm from Texas. I don't know what water is.
I don't know. He can go all the way to the East Coast and jump into the Atlantic Ocean. He can just go do that. I don't know what the lake is that's right next to New York. But anyhow, might be Lake Superior. I don't remember. Sorry, not my degree's not in geography. I'm sorry.
See, the Bills have to have their eyes on somebody later that has value at, say, the second or third round position, because there's no reason that they would trade back as far as they did from 28 to 33 unless they had their eyes on somebody that nobody else has their eyes on that they think is going to be really, really good.
Absolutely.
I have no idea who that is.
We're just going to have to wait and see.
They better take a wide receiver, because if they're not, they're going to be losing a lot of fans.
Oh, absolutely.
Josh Allen is not going to be happy.
Well, that concludes our coverage of the draft. CJ, I want to say thank you so much for joining me in the studio today, buddy.
It was a pleasure being out here.
As always, I love having my guests here on the show, and thank you so much for listening to the Hawk Talk podcast here on the QU Media Podcast Network. You can find all our past, present, and future episodes on QUmedia.net. Follow us on all our social medias on Instagram and Twitter. Please have a great day, and remember, it's a great day to be a Hawk.